The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 624, recorded on September 13th, 2021.
Podcast, the 457th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I'm TJ Dunzer.
I'm Scott Durr.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
Right. So I'll start first on what we've been playing. I finished a game called The Artful Escape. It's another game by Annapurna, who are the same people who've been bringing out games like 12 Minutes. And another game, I forgot the name of it, in which you have three stories going on at once. You eventually go to a strange planet, and one of the things is that The Artful Escape isn't really a good game, as in game. It's a mild... by the way, the other game was Last Stop. And by the way, Last Stop was interesting. I just felt like they ended it too... It's like, wait, that's it? The game ends there? That's all it was? I hate it when it happens. It's like, you needed to spend more time with these characters. Anyways, The Artful Escape has extremely easy platforming. And some Simon Says and that's it. But I will say it has some of the best visuals and some of the best music you'll ever play in a game this year. It is a game that has to be experienced. And it is on Game Pass. So if you have Game Pass, you have no reason not to check it out. And just play it as an interactive story. Have you played it, TJ?
I have not.
Okay. I think this might be a game you might enjoy, even though the gameplay isn't really there.
I hear that, like, it doesn't really do anything all that different from pretty much every other Annapurna game like it. Like,
oh no, well, 12 Minutes has gameplay. I mean,
somebody described it to me as, of all the Annapurna games, it's the Annapurniest.
Here's the thing, I could easily see this being a movie.
Yeah.
See, here's the thing about Annapurna, they're literally indie film producers, right? They produce indie films. They produce indie games, but not indie games as in small, tiny groups making a game like Stardew Valley. No, they make indie film games. Because they always hire big names for their games. I mean, the big name in The Artful Escape is just Carl Weathers. And a bunch of, voiceover stalwarts. But here's the thing. It's corny beyond belief. But as you keep playing, the corniness becomes its strength, and the ending is extremely satisfying. And you'll have said, oh, I enjoyed that. Hmm. And for those of you, here's the story. It's about a kid, he's 17 years old, and his uncle is a mega famous folk singer. The thing is, he really isn't into folk music. He's into hard rock. Not hard rock. 80s rock. Because everything that he does, it's highly reminiscent of 80s rock. You know, long-haired rock like Van Halen or Whitesnake. You know, that sort of stuff. And it's about a 17-year-old's self-discovering himself. But here's the other thing. When I was playing, I thought there must have been a shit ton of people who worked on Oxenfree who developed this. Because everything about it screams Oxenfree and After Party. It has the same exact feel, but it's not by the same developer. I just think they got some people who worked on Oxenfree to work on this. If you play, you'll say, holy shit, I'm playing a version of Oxenfree. By the way, Oxenfree 2 is still on its way.
Yep. That one's, I'm really excited about that. I really enjoyed the twists and turns of the first game.
I only played the first game once. I approved of the ending, and I said, yeah, that's it. I don't need to play anymore.
That's fair. That's your canon ending.
Yep. I did the same thing with Fallout 4, which is why every time I try to play Fallout 4, it's like, I'm not enjoying this.
I did something similar with Undertale. I got to the true ending, and after I did...
You're not going to do Genocide ever.
No, not ever. And in fact, I was like, I'm going to put you guys away forever and make sure that you live your happy ending.
Yeah, because Genocide is a very dark and not happy.
Well, it's not only dark, but also the game remembers it. And no matter how saintly you are in subsequent plays, it's going to say, yeah, we remember what you did to Genocide, Ron. And we're going to punish you for that.
Spoiler, at the end of the true ending, if you were a pacifist and you went after the true ending.
And you never did anything, yeah.
The last character comes out to basically ask you, hey, you really fixed things. Everything is good now. Everybody is happy. Everything is fine. And things turned out great. Like, things are the way they should be.
You hugged everybody.
Could you do everybody a favor and, like, not come back and reset everything and make it go back to the beginning and the way things were? Because then everybody can stay happy. And I was, like, tearful-eyed, like, yes, I can do that. And I never played the game again.
You know, that reminds me. I haven't played the Stanley Parable in a long while. And I never did the thing in which you alter your clock to get that achievement of not having played for 5 years or something like that. I have to check to see when I last played the Stanley Parable. But yeah, warning for people who play Undertale. If you ever do a Genocide run, the game will never forgive you for it, and it'll never let you forget it, unless, of course, you change the files.
Even if you do a pacifist run after the fact,
yeah.
It will remember.
It will remember, so yeah, you're a liar. Anyway, getting back to the Artful Escape, I think you should really try it. I didn't pay for it, so I don't have that burden of saying, well, was it worth what I paid for it? I just really enjoyed the experience, and I think it is your kind of game, TJ. Go in knowing that there's not much gameplay there. And I will say this, you know, when you're running... If you hold down X, you play the guitar while you're running, and things bloom. So I made things a little harder for myself by having to do the entire game with X depressed when I was doing the platforming. So, in other words, I didn't get an achievement for it, but I just like the way everything just lit up in the background when you're playing your guitar as you run. And then when you jump, if you press, I think it's Y, he does one of those aerial twists of his guitar, just strums it. No, if you press Y, he goes down and he slams his guitar to the ground, which is how you activate some of the things. The only problem I had was that it used the left shoulder, the right shoulder, and the ABY. And the only thing that makes it really difficult sometimes is that it's one of those rare games in which you might have to press three buttons at once. And the shoulder buttons are positioned in such a way that it's easy to forget. Oh, it's left B, not left Y. But, like I said, there is no failure state in the game. No matter how much you fuck up, it just keeps moving on. There is no fail. The entire point of the game is the story. And the decisions you make in it. And you can, if you want it, turn it into a coming out story for a transsexual. Because, when you're asked to put on the clothes that you really want, you can make yourself look like a girl.
Mm-hmm. So. That's one thing I did see, and one thing I saw a GIF of it, and it was just, and when I was looking through and, like, freeze framing on some of the stuff you could wear, I was like, dang, you can dress up as, like...
Ballerina dress, yeah.
No, I was gonna say, you could dress up as, like, 95% of David Bowie's personas.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I kind of guessed this from the beginning when playing it, after I finished it. And by the way, I played the entire thing on Twitch, So if you go to my Twitch channel, you can watch all of my gameplay. I found out, yes, this is basically inspired by Ziggy Stardust. Mm-hmm. And the person who wrote the story is a rock musician himself. So yeah, like I said, this game is an experience game, and it's the sort of game that you'll play every so often. And I think people will play it every so often to put themselves in a good mood. It is a very upbeat game. I mean, there's some serious parts to it, but all the while, all this self-discovery and all this space stuff, it just keeps going up and up and up and up. And, okay, sometimes the main character is so gormless, you want to slap him in the face and say, "What do you think?" You know, but then again, you have to realize, oh, it's a 17-year-old. He doesn't know. So. There's also the question of if he's really dreaming or if he's not dreaming. I'm not going to spoil anything by saying if he is or isn't. But I will say, there's this guy who's doing the concert who really threatens the main character and is an asshole and all that stuff. And is just so good, feels so good for the main character to say, "Well, shut the fuck up. I'm the talent, you shut up. I don't give a shit what you say. I'm going to do what I want." Like I said, this is a feel-good game. So if you want to try it out, try it out. Especially if you know that you're not going to be challenged in terms of gameplay that much in the game. And I'll say this, you know, the visuals and the music, it's right up there with Psychonauts 2. I don't know which one is better.
Well, that's impressive then.
Yep. And I just said that this game is comparable to Helmut Fulbar's iCosmic Smell the Universe song.
Oh, nice.
Matter of fact, you know, they both have this, a lot of the times they have both the same psychedelic psychedelic imagery. I think it's a little bit better in the Artful Escape. It is a must game to play if you want to play a game that's a non-game.
That sounds like an Annapurna game.
Yeah. I've also started Assassin's Creed Valhalla.
You don't sound pleased about that.
I hate the combat. And I know it's going to be a slog all the way through, but it's a challenge to myself. I've also been playing the new DLC for the State of Decay 2. I think it's their final DLC, the Homecoming DLC, which takes the Trumbull Valley map and just expands it to the size of what I think the first State of Decay was. I don't know because I only touched State of Decay once, and when I came back to it after leaving it for a while, found my entire colony dead because it's like Tamagotchi. Things go on while you're not playing in the first game. I said, "Nah, I'm not going to deal with this. I don't want to babysit a game." So, TJ, what have you been playing?
Deathloop.
Yeah.
The holy shit out of it for review. And it's a game of the year contender.
Okay.
It's the best game to have come out on PS5, specifically for PS5.
Fortunately, it's on Steam.
Yeah, well, it's still on PS5, console exclusive for now.
Yeah, in an hour it's going to be on. In a year it's going to be on Game Pass.
I know, and I hope everybody enjoys it when it gets there. It's an incredible game. It's both a fine evolution of the things that Arkane has been doing for years.
He's added a time loop to it.
And it's a great twist on like some of the stuff that makes a lot of other games very good. Dark Souls invasion mechanics are very good in it. The dying and having to make your way through a situation again is very well implemented. The Hitman-esque just collecting of information and routines and understanding how everybody works and where they'll be and what they'll be doing. Its murder puzzle is very, very, very good. And
now, was this a multiplayer in which people can can involve themselves in the game as well. I'm trying to remember.
So you play as Colt when you're playing the single player,
right,
when you're playing the main story's protagonist.
But you can invade.
At a certain point, you can start playing as Juliana and invade other people's playing as Colt's timeline.
Let's all thank Dark Souls for that.
And that's what I was saying. It's like, it's a really good input. And let me get there. And when you invade somebody's timeline, Colt has three, like, his life can be deleted three times before he dies for reals and has to restart the day. Juliana can die once. So Juliana is at a slight disadvantage where she has more health, but she can only die one time. Meanwhile, she gets to bring a certain loadout of weapons into the game that she continues to grow as you continue to play as her. So not only do you have a better chance of surviving her as Colt if you know where she's going and if you take her on in a straight up fight, but also you have a chance of scoring a really good weapon out of her for your everyday use. And then there's the fact that, like, if you as Juliana kill Colt, you raise her hunter rank, which allows you to unlock bigger arsenals for her that she can take into the beginning of the loadout. Or you can unlock different outfits for Colt and Juliana to just be used throughout the game. So I really enjoy the reward system that they made for playing Juliana. I enjoy the reward that you get for killing Juliana as Colt. I think they did a really good job of handling that invasion mechanic.
Cool. Just makes me wonder about about Ghostwire Tokyo is going to be, because that's the other exclusive for the PS for PlayStation that, since Microsoft bought ZeniMax, is going to be only a timed exclusive. It's interesting.
One of the things that I really enjoy about the invasion mechanic too is that you can set the game on single player.
Yeah. No invasions.
Or online.
Yeah.
Or no, you'll still be invaded, but Juliana will be played by an AI bot.
Oh no, I get that.
Which is easier to deal with than rolling the dice on a random player being really good or not so good.
By the way, something I have to mention is that Neo is free right now. I don't know if the freebie ended on Epic Gear or not, but it's going to be that I'm going to be playing Neo before I ever played Dark Souls.
I took the Epic free deal there, and I've actually played Dark Souls 3, so I'll be playing. I think I should play Neo next as well, but I haven't played that yet.
The reason why I bring it up is that Neo is different than Dark Souls.
Right.
Yeah. Deathloop, it's an incredible arcane game. It's everything I wanted it to be. The only thing that really kept it from being a 10 out of 10, I've seen people give it a 10 out of 10, and I couldn't. It crashed on me twice. And the moment a game crashes on me, then it's out of 10 range. You don't get to crash it and dashboard me and and be a 10.
What is it with PlayStation 5 games just crashing a lot? I mean, it happened with some... No, I mean, it happened with Subnautica, the new Subnautica game. People report a lot of crashes in that, too. And unfortunately, in Subnautica, there's no autosave.
So the save system there's no manual save in Deathloop. You basically have four sections of day that you travel through and the ability to restart the day. And it saves at each segment between before you enter or after you leave an area. It was a thing where, like, even if it didn't crash on me, I occasionally saw some stuff where, like, there would be, like, the game is gorgeous for the most part, but there would occasionally be instances where I would see, like, smoke floating over a barrel and it would glitch a little bit because it's trying to, like, do the full... Smoke is kind of is one of the graphics that's in line with, like, with ray tracing.
Yeah.
And it just kind of glitched a little bit in a way that is, like, I don't think that's supposed to be a part of the game. And like, I have colleagues that were playing on PC, and I went to talk with them about it, and they were saying that even on PC, they were it's very seldom, okay? I'll put that out there right now. It's very, very seldom. But the fact that it can crash on either platform it's on and just dashboard you, and you lose a certain amount of, like, an investigation that you were working on and have to start back at that segment of the day, is a bummer. I love the game. I think it's easily Game of the Year material. It's one of the best it's one of the best action stealth games I've played in a very long time. And I hope people enjoy it when it comes out, and I hope that when it comes to Xbox, people enjoy it there too.
Yeah. I'm just wondering what Arkane's next project is going to be now.
Redfall.
Oh, that's right. Well,
that one's going to be delightful too.
So here's the thing. There was some leaks about Redfall today.
Uh-huh.
And people said it's not going to be a looter shooter, but it's going to be more along the lines of Borderlands.
But Borderlands is a looter shooter.
They're different kinds of looter shooters.
Huh.
I mean, I'm sorry, not loot box shooters, just looter shooters. But yeah, it's going to be very Borderlands-ish, according to leaks. Which is fine. I mean, Borderlands with vampires is always fun.
Yeah, that's kind of what I expected. I don't know what that's... I don't know. That's not all that surprising to me.
Some people thought it might be like Left 4 Dead.
Oh. Nah, it was never going to be like that. I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't know. I want a good narrative out of it. I just don't know that I would have expected it to be like Left 4 Dead.
At least the character is a lot more memorable than the ones in Borderlands. You know, because I still struggle to remember. Oh, there's the one with the shield, I think. And...
Yeah, they have all sorts of abilities.
From Borderlands. I mean, these characters look more interesting.
Right. But what I'm saying is that, like, these characters all have, like, very specialized abilities. And that screams to me of, like, there's a RPG-style progression system. So I don't know why anyone would expect it to be Left 4 Dead.
Hmm. Just the feel of it, I guess.
Maybe.
But, I'm really interested to see the kind of personalities these the head vampires have, because they're really entertaining in that trailer.
Yeah. Arkane out here trying to do vampires justice while Vampire the Masquerade just twists and turns in the sunset.
So I'm wondering about Ghostwire Tokyo. It's set for release in spring 2022.
Mm-hmm. The trailer during the gameplay trailer we saw during the PlayStation showcase looked fun.
Oh, I missed the showcase. I know it was announced.
There was lots of Slenderman, and
fuck Slenderman. Here's the thing. Talking about the Sony show, one of the disappointing things is I don't care about KOTOR because that was released and it was full. If you want to make me excited, let me know that KOTOR 2 is being fixed and restored to its natural thing.
Yeah.
KOTOR
was kind of a big thing for me because I never played the original.
You never played... Well, it's backwards compatible for one. And you can buy it for $5.
Yeah, but both of the KOTOR games, I thought they were good. And, I remember the second game... you didn't have to import the data, but you had, like, a little quiz.
Yeah, they says, oh, Revan was male or female, Revan was light or dark. And here's the thing, she always romanced Karth, no matter what, if you said she was female. And light-sided. Because if she's female and dark-sided, there's a possibility she kills Karth. But yeah, I'm gonna say one thing, if you choose to be on the dark side in the first KOTOR, man, is it just chilling. It is chilling. Especially, here's the thing, you never played it, so I don't want to spoil an 18-year-old game. The other thing is that I had the DLC for KOTOR on my original Xbox, which did not work with a 360, and it did not work with anything else. It was the Yavin Station DLC. which is basically a store in which you can buy some advanced stuff. You know, like advanced lightsaber crystals and stuff, things like that. Another little gameplay hint for KOTOR, if you get Force Push, just level that up to the max and just use that as your way to victory. Just Force Push everybody in the game. It works. They get knocked back, they get damaged, and they take time to get up, and by the time they get up, you've already... You can Force Push them back down again.
Yeah. I mean, like, I know it's backwards compatible. I know that I could just go... I know that I could go on Steam and just...
Well, if you haven't faced it, might as well get the remaster, but...
But that's... Yeah, that's what I was about to say, is that those games have also aged like milk. And,
No. You know, the first KOTOR has not aged at all when I play it.
I mean, graphically,
yeah. I mean, it just looks like any other BioWare game. I will say, and of course, this is a timed exclusive, of course.
It looks like every other BioWare game. Like, okay, let me just put it out there. Other BioWare games also look bad at this stage.
Jade Empire never looked bad.
It was good in its time, but like you put it up against games now, and yes, it doesn't look like it's aged well.
I don't know. Here's the thing, though.
From someone like, I think that I also happen to think that Half-Life looks like it's aged like milk.
Half-Life looks awful now.
But it's just aged poorly.
No, Half-Life is a bunch of polygons stuck together. I will say this though. The one thing you're missing. And there's no way to get it, is back in 2003, Revenge of the Sith had been released, Star Wars was at its lowest, and then people got Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, and the theme brought up, and the crawl came up, and it was like, oh my fucking god, Star Wars can be good.
Yeah. So like,
you would believe what a fresh air.
I'm already spoiled on it.
You would believe how much of a piece of fresh air Knights of the Old Republic was back in the day.
Right. So now even though I'm spoiled on it, I'm interested in playing through it like and experiencing it for myself. So I'm excited for that remake.
Well, here's a question.
I want to play it.
Do you know the big twist?
Yes.
Okay. Not that it's the most hidden twist, but.
Right. But there was, like, no way I could get away without hearing that.
Yeah, if you played Knights of the Old Republic, Star Wars The Old Republic, the MMO, one of the DLC revolved about Revan. But I will say this, Jade Empire managed to out-twist KOTOR. But yeah, it was like, I shouldn't have been surprised in hindsight, but it was like, oh. I will say this, do you know about the famous scene of Malak being unmasked?
I can't remember.
Okay, at least that will be a shock, and that is absolutely chilling, the first time you see it. Mm. It is just, it is absolutely scary. And it also has one of the most heartwarming moments in any Star Wars game. This is not a spoiler. Because there's multiple choices that you could do, but at some point you go back to Corban and you come upon a tomb of Ajunta Paul, who was the biggest, baddest Sith Lord ever. And you can convince him to turn back to the light and go back to his master, you know, as a ghost, as a Force ghost. And I'm going to say this, in that game, good feels good, evil feels evil in the best possible way. In a badass way. I mean, if you decide to be evil in that game, oh my god. You thought Mass Effect can be harsh? The Renegade decisions could be harsh, I mean, the dark side options in some of KOTOR are like, oh my god.
Mm-hmm.
That is just cruel. And like I said, the dark side ending is like, I did the Dark Side run once, and I said, okay, that's enough. But I still watched that ending on YouTube. But yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what it's like playing it remastered and all that. Like I said, I would rather they'd done KOTOR 2 because... Have you played KOTOR 2?
No, because I haven't played KOTOR 1.
Okay. Kreia is one of the best female villains you'll ever see in any game, ever. And she's not even a villain, but she's a villain, but not a villain. She's one of the most interesting female... She's more interesting than, say, GLaDOS. She's more interesting than Shodan. She's more interesting than any other female villain that you'll see in a game. And her motivations also are interesting. There are videos that are 3 hours long about her.
Hmm.
And here's the other thing. Star Wars The Old Republic 2 was written by Chris Avellone, who made it his business to watch every single piece of Star Wars media he could get his hands on. And basically, KOTOR 2 is a big middle finger to the Jedi and the Sith and the Force. And the idea the Force did it. You know?
Mm-hmm.
It is so deconstructive, it's great. Anyways, let's get back to the Sony thing. Scott, was there anything in the Sony event that you really were interested in?
Yes, it was.
Don't say it was something with Trails in the Sky or anything like that.
No, it wasn't.
Or a new East game.
No, I have to look. There was something. Hold on, there was something.
TJ, besides Knights of the Old Republic, was there anything else that really intrigued you?
Insomniac Games is the hardest working studio in the universe right now. They're working on not only a follow-up to Spider-Man, but they're also working on a Wolverine game, which is delightful. Oh my
Aren't
god.
Aren't they also working on a remaster of Uncharted?
That's not Insomniac, that's Naughty Dog.
Oh, Naughty Dog, that's right.
But no, they just came off of Miles Morales last year. They just put out Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart this year, and now they're headed for Spider-Man 2, and after that is going to be Wolverine. Like,
Here's the thing. I find it hard to get excited about those games because I just think, you know, they're just aping off of Arkham Asylum, and it just makes me want to see a new Arkham Asylum game.
The setup that they've got for Spider-Man 2 is at least well worth... I think it's well worth paying attention to, because they're bringing in Kraven, which, like, Kraven is such a underused Spider-Man villain. And
that's because he keeps getting killed!
Yeah.
Oh. I remember.
What's that?
What's
that? It was Forspoken.
Oh, yeah. That game looks really interesting. That game is done by Luminous Productions, which is a subsidiary of Square Enix that they brought in to help with Final Fantasy XV, and then they liked what they were doing so much with like ray tracing effects that they gave them their own studio and funded them to do their own game.
You know, I just can't wait until 2023 when the wave of Unreal Engine 5 games really, really hit.
Going to be a ton of good games coming out in 2022 and 23.
I'm thinking about 23 when a lot of the games that are being made with the Unreal Engine 5 that are they're really investing a lot of effort into are released.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say this. Forspoken, the traversal of the world looks cool. The world itself looks cool. But I think the thing that sells me on it most, man, they have good dragon tech. They make a good dragon in that game.
Yeah. That's always enjoyable.
Who cares? When is Tunic coming out?
You gotta see the dragon.
I saw it.
The dragon, Jonah. Yeah. It's a good dragon.
I've seen screenshots. I mean, I haven't. You know, I just wasn't able to watch the thing because I was working on a science fiction show on Apple TV. So, what's really strange is this is the first time in 30 years I ever did a science fiction movie, and I think it's because I'm in New York and not a lot of science fiction movies have their production studios here. Mm-hmm. So I have to play someone who's in London in the year 2066. but it's a dystopia in which their fashions really haven't changed from the 60s. So, anyway, what else, TJ?
I'm really interested in the direction they go with that Wolverine game, because, you know, the last time anyone did a Wolverine game was the tie-in to the X-Men Origins Wolverine. Yeah. And that game was ridiculously good for being tied into that movie, which was ridiculously not good.
What, you didn't like Deadpool in that movie?
It was such a good an appearance of Deadpool that Ryan Reynolds goes back in time to kill himself playing that role.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see that Wolverine is going to be under Insomniac, because Insomniac has been showing that they know how to handle the material. They know how to weave a good Marvel story. And we didn't get much out of that trailer. It was just a really fucked up bar, but it was bloody as hell. And that kind of sets the mood right there, that this is not going to be like a whimsical wandering around New York, no blood Spider-Man game. It's going to be a visceral Wolverine game.
Because we need something for the Edgelords.
Oh my god, I don't know if I would consider Wolverine an Edgelord.
I'm not saying calling Wolverine an edgelord. I'm calling the people who want bloody, gory superhero movies edgelords.
I don't know. I really enjoyed it when you got to pull a guy out of a helicopter and hoist him up into the blades in the original. But it's over the top. It's like ridiculous. It's like, you remember the Punisher game that came out on Xbox and how ridiculously over the top the violence was? There was like no good reason for it other than the fact that it was like they had the license and they went wild with it. And Insomniac, like, they've earned the respect they deserve to be able to kind of do that kind of stuff. And so I kind of hope they go wild with it. Hmm. You know who nobody has fucked with in a X-Men game? I want to see them put in Omega Red, and I want a freaking Wolverine Omega Red fight that's like epic. That's like one of my favorite rivalries in the X-Men universe, and I want that in a Wolverine game.
So Scott, what have you been playing?
I took a little break from Cold Steel 3 to play a game called Foresighted Fantasy. And it's a side-scrolling platforming game in which you freeze the camera to make jumps using the edge of the screen to go through and put yourself in a different part of the screen by, you know, from the, you know, part of the screen that you went through. And it doesn't seem to have a lot of music. It just, you can, but you have sound effects and you just like doing a lot of running. And, you know, it's a nice, challenging little,
it's a puzzle platformer. Yeah.
Hmm?
It's a puzzle platformer.
Yeah, puzzle platformer.
Came out a while ago.
It seems to be a very short game, though. I've only beat the first world, and, after you beat the first world, they start introducing new, physics mechanics into it, like you can go upside down. You have two characters, by the way, and you have a male and female. And you can switch between them when they go through the side of the screen.
Yeah.
And then, as you get further on, that plays more of a part, as one character will be upside down, the other character will be right side up. So they'll start playing into the physics of the puzzles in each world. So they evolve it. And I think, like, the next world, you can go into the forescreen and background. So it's a fun little game.
Yeah, I mean, the developer... Ludoland. That was their first game. It was back in 2016. Then they made something called Box Looter 2018, and then Quirky mm-hmm. Crook also in 2018, and they haven't done anything since.
Mm. I think this game came out this year, I thought.
No, it came out in 2016.
Oh, wow. Huh.
It's a recent, it's an old game.
Yeah, oh, okay. it just was promoted for some reason. I guess it was on sale.
Well, here's the thing. If you really, it's a $10 game normally. If
yeah.
it was recommended to you and you really enjoyed it, then the algorithm did its job.
Yeah, that's true. I was fine with it. Yeah, and I'm still playing Cold Steel 3 as well. because I want to get the Code Seal 4. So I'm pushing through that on my chapter 4 of 5 for this game. So most of the way through it. And boys, the story just giving you plot twists after plot twists. There was like the end of chapter 3 was just like a whole bunch of plot twists. Oh, man. You just like, I don't want to spoil anything, but it's just stuff you thought you knew some people, and then you find out that they've been lying to you, and you just feel that sense of betrayal, like, how could you do that, you know? That's always fun.
It's funny, Ludolette is a developer based in Seattle, and they haven't done, I wonder if they just broke up, if they're just, you know, a small team, and said, oh, we're going to go our separate ways.
That's possible.
Yeah, because their other two games aren't anywhere near as developed as Foresighted Fantasy.
It's a shame then. It does have a few glitches, like you'll glitch through the world and then fall all the way down into the... they have what... It's neat because the aesthetic is like you're recording this through your camcorder and you pause and... There's these little, like, snow screen.
You know, yeah, you're like, moving around the...
They don't know the snow, the TV snow anymore because you just don't have it. But basically, back in the 80s, when the TV didn't have any reception, it would just be snow. It would be black and white little dots going shh on the screen. And
you could move it around,
And if you hit it, you die. So like the game glitches out and you fall into, I guess I call it the snow void, to put you back up in the main screen or the main area of play.
Anyways.
So that's what I've been playing.
Cool. We're going to move on to the news. The first game news is Twitch sues Hate Raiders. And this comes from PC Gamer. Twitch has filed a lawsuit against two quote-unquote hate raiders who it says have persistently targeted marginalized streamers with quote-unquote racist, sexist, and homophobic language and content despite its efforts to stop them. The exact identities of the hate raiders are not currently known. They're referred to as by aliases Cruise Control and Creatine Overdose. That last name just says so much about that person. But both are believed to reside in Europe. Hate raids are organized attacks on Twitch, in which bots flood chats with slurs, threats, and abuse. It's been a problem for months, but didn't come to widespread attention until August, when streamers planned a one-day boycott of the platform using the hashtag #ADayOffTwitch to protest what they saw as Twitch's lack of meaningful action to solve the problem. I think we discussed this 2 weeks ago, didn't we? The day off Twitch. I think we did. We did talk about it.
We were talking about it a little bit because hate raids have been kind of going on and Twitch has been doing very little to... Twitch has been doing very little openly to combat it.
No, we didn't discuss it. We didn't discuss it in a podcast. We just mentioned it on Twitter. And despite the major, major streamers not, you know... See, a day off Twitch was just... Creators were just going to, you know, stay off Twitch for a day. And despite the largest streamers staying on... Twitch lost, what was it, 25% of their...
They're usually, the viewership on Twitch usually peaks at around 40,000 in a day, and it was somewhere down around, it was like 35,000 that day, which is a substantial amount of people.
I think someone said they lost 800 million or something like that, or something, some large amount of money that way.
Yeah, because you're talking about like 5,000 people that didn't. Even if that seems small, that's like when you put that into the grand scheme of things, that's like a good. I think it's around 10% of their entire audience for that entire day.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that they did it on September 1st, and Twitch started their subscriber promotions on September 2nd. Mm-hmm. That was kind of interesting timing from Twitch. So yeah, the platform's average peak of 4.5 concurrent viewers sat around at around 3.5, so a million people were not there.
Yes. And that's like, you know, one could say, like, what's one day, but at the same time, like, it was proof of the fact that when people get together when they're angry, they can make a difference. And I don't know, you had top streamers out there saying, like, you're nobodies, this doesn't make a difference, this doesn't matter, why should I bother with it, because all it does is make my audience pissed off. It's like, that's you being a pussy about it, and it does make a difference.
And oh, by the way, if your audience gets pissed off about it, guess what? We don't care about your audience. That's like Samuel Jackson being told that right-wingers weren't going to like his movies anymore because of what he was saying. I said, fuck them, I don't care. Fuck them.
Yeah, if you have cultivated an audience that will be angry at you for doing the right thing, then that really speaks to the kind of culture that you've cultivated over the years.
Anyways, Twitch has promised to implement new security measures to help streamers deal with hate raids, but as streamer Art for the Apocalypse demonstrated in August, dealing with determined hate raiders is extremely difficult. Twitch effectively acknowledged its current vulnerability in its lawsuit, saying its defendants were able to evade bans by, quote-unquote, creating new alternative Twitch accounts. Ugh, come on. And continually altering their self-described hate rate code to avoid detection and suspension by Twitch. You know, here's the thing that I would have if I were Twitch. If you're going from a VPN, you're not allowed on Twitch.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck VPNs. Fuck them.
Well, and also, like, I don't know, like, the when Twitch banned music on Twitch because
of so easy,
they like did it overnight. They implemented a system that forced a lot of people to just like change the way they went about things,
and it was hilarious when Metallica. Here's the thing about Metallica. For those who don't know, they hated MP3s. They got Napster torn down, and they complained and whined about MP3s and how unfair it was and how people were robbing them from their money. When Metallica started playing their music on Twitch on that thing, all of a sudden, you heard generic elevator music as they played. And it was sort of like karmic retribution against Metallica. Anyways, the lawsuit is seeking legally binding injunction that will prohibit the defendants from using Twitch, as well as various sorts of damages and legal fees. There's some hurdles to get there because they don't know who cruise control and creatine overdose are. That in itself may not be a major issue. Lawsuits are often filed against anonymous does, as in John Does. Bungie and Ubisoft's joint suit against cheat makers, for instance, named 50 of them. But there also may be jurisdictional issues, as Cruise Control is believed to be a resident of the Netherlands. Why am I not surprised? And all creatine overdoses from Austria. Why am I not surprised? Part 2. I mean, if here's the thing, guys. You better hope that you never people never find out your real names, because you'll be in a world of hurt for the rest of your fucking lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like,
let me put it this way. When was the last time you heard from Marcus Persson?
Oh, I don't know.
When he turned out to be a if not a neo-Nazi, but a far-right-wing apologist.
He's still on Twitter.
Yeah, no one cares about him, no.
Count, but I guess he didn't.
Yeah, but let me ask you a question. When did you ever see a news item about him? When was the last time?
News item, no. Yeah,
no. No one cares. He's not news. He's vanished. Microsoft. There's a reason why Microsoft said we'll pay for Minecraft. The biggest thing is we want you away. We want you gone. We don't want you anywhere near Minecraft anymore. Because if you remember, do you remember when they were translating Minecraft into different languages and some of them had racial slurs in them? It was,
yeah.
So. Anyways, Twitch better clean up its act. Because, you know, Twitch just got a reminder that you're not far away from being MySpace.
Right. And I mean, like, the whole, like, we don't have the power or the resources to stop this. It's like, you're fucking part of Amazon. You have Amazon money backing you. you're bullshit. Like, what the fuck are you saying?
And it's really weird that Google is half-assing with Facebook game streaming. And, oh, by the way, I don't know if you noticed this, but when you go onto Steam, if you go to a game, very often they'll have a stream of that game going on Steam. Yeah. And if Steam decides, you know what, we smell blood in the water, it could be very easy for Steam to have an ecosystem of selling games and streaming them. Because if they make it very easy for you to stream your games that you already have on Steam, why would you want to go to Twitch?
Yeah, I mean, like, and you had, like, it coincides with the fact that two of Twitch's most major streamers just left Twitch altogether and headed over to YouTube Gaming.
Wow. I remember,
Dr. Lupo is like a million strong subscriber channel, and Tim the Tatman had a pretty strong following as well. Yeah. And both of them signed exclusive contracts with YouTube Gaming.
Here's the other thing, is that Facebook is hypersensitive, but at least it's sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It has a sort of all crimes are equal in its moderation, which can be annoying, but at least it's doing something.
Right. And I wouldn't say that YouTube Gaming is far better either, but at least you have the tools to do more policing there than you have on Twitch. Twitch is a lot of, like, the tools are there, but they don't work as well as anyone needs them to, and they're not very obvious either.
I mean, fuck it. If I block someone on Instagram, one of the options is block this person and any other usernames they try to create.
Mm-hmm. Like IP block.
Yeah. Of course, that can be any. Who's using AOL as a ISP anymore, though? That was one of the downfalls of being on AOL back in the day, is that if someone blocked AOL and you were using AOL as your ISP, well, guess what? Sucks to be you. I don't know. We're going to move on to the next item. And guess what? Guess what, TJ? We have another company that's getting blasted for inappropriate behavior.
Yeah.
This one hurts a little bit. Because Paradox Interactive, you know.
Paradox CEO apologizes for inappropriate behavior with employees in 2018. From PC Gamer.
By the way, we should mention, it's going to talk about in the article, that this is actually an extension of something else that happened last week with Paradox, and that is that the CEO stepped down. Mm-hmm. Because of a questionnaire, I believe. I realized that 40% of employees there said they had been harassed at some point at their company. Or some ridiculously high number.
Yeah. And it's... Oh, yeah. Well, let's jump into it first. Paradox Interactive CEO Frederick Wester has issued a statement apologizing for his inappropriate behavior with another Paradox employee during a company conference held in 2018. The apology comes less than 2 weeks after the resignation of Paradox's previous CEO, Ebba Ljunggren.
Yeah, right. when you have a Scandinavian like that, Ljunggren.
Okay.
Younglings.
Ljunggren.
No, he killed all the younglings.
One week after the leak of an internal survey at the studio, which found that a majority of female employees had experienced some form of abusive treatment. Wester said at the time that Ljunggren's resignation was not connected to the leaked survey, which concluded that offensive treatment is a systematic and far too common problem at Paradox, and that there is a perception that perpetrators at managerial level are protected by the company.
That's, okay, Mr. Wester, bullshit. Bullshit.
Despite that, the timing of recent events is bound to raise questions, and having to apologize for a past workplace incident less than 2 weeks after being reappointed to the top job, and just 1 week after a report about widespread mistreatment of employees at Paradox became public knowledge, is not a great place to start. Wester acknowledged that fact and said that because of it, he would not be directly involved with handling HR issues.
Well, Doc, you know, here's the thing. Shouldn't it be the opposite?
I mean,
Anyways, keep going.
One might argue that HR should investigate him, but I understand that this makes my cause less credible when it comes to handling these issues internally, and will therefore not be directly involved with it. It will be done by HR at a Paradox with external help, but of course with my full support if needed, he said. From that message, it's unclear what exactly Wester is recusing himself from, wider employee-related matters, or further resolution of the 2018 incident itself.
Yeah, you would think that a CEO would be more hands-on when it comes to these kind of complaints. Yeah, you have to have the experts at HR because they know how to deal with it. Mm-hmm. But you have to be in it with both hands, you know, even if you're just getting advice from HR. It's like, oh, I don't know how to deal with that. It's like, oh, I forgot who it was, but some executives said that he didn't know how to deal with women, so he wasn't going to deal with the problems. It's like, wait, what? You don't know how to have a woman in the same room with you? Oh, that's right. It was the vice president at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Pence who said that.
Yeah, he thought it was inappropriate to have dinner with women, so he didn't have any meetings with them at all.
Yeah.
Okay.
This reminds me, I don't know if you've ever heard of the Broken Token. For board games, they create these wooden things that you can put inside, take everything out of your game box, put these wooden partitions in, and make your game fit everything, including all the expansions in your board game. I mean, I have it for Seven Wonders and for Lords of Waterdeep, you know, and all that. And just recently, the CEO had to resign his position because of his misdealings, and that was just with one person. And companies were pulling out of agreements with that company. So they installed a female CEO, and he basically said, you know, I'm no longer involved with this company. You don't have to worry about me. I'm out, you know. And he had to make clear so that the company wouldn't go under. And it was really depressing because I really like Broken Token. You know, and some one person can bring it down just like that.
Yep.
And it's depressing with Paradox Interactive because they do stuff that a lot of the major publishers don't do. And I know TJ is very well aware of this because of Europa Universalis and Crusader Kings and all these other niche games in the strategy sphere. You know?
Yeah. Paradox Interactive has not only been a part of, like a huge part of strategy in 4X over the last years, like decades, really, but they were also, like, one of the things that's most disappointing in this is that in 2020, they're a publisher, too, and they created a new deal under which, like, they would be inviting all Paradox employees and workers and various folks published under the company to be employees with influence with job benefits and company pay and more, which was like great. It was unheard of. It sounded fantastic. And
yeah,
to see them at this stage and like in this state, it's just sad because like it's
here's the, let me list off some of the games that they publish, okay? City Skylines, Pillars of Eternity, Prison Architect, Age of Wonders, Magicka, Empire of Sin, all of the Crusader Kings games, all the Europa Universalis games, Surviving Mars, all the Hearts of Iron games, all the Imperator games, all of the they publish Vampire. Well, they're going to publish Vampire: The Masquerade's Bloodlines too, whatever that's going to be. Tyranny, Cities in Motion, Mountain Blade, You know? Knights of Pen and Paper, for crying out loud. They have done a lot of quote-unquote niche stuff that you really don't expect from the major publishers. But they're a source of games that a lot of people are attracted to that they really can't get anywhere else of a really high quality.
Mm-hmm. They're one of the crews out there that has been striving to keep mid to high
double A
strategy,
yeah,
moving, like keep that genre bustling in today's age, where other publishers don't do that anymore. And so, like, and then to hear like the way that they were handling their business, like, you really thought they were one of the good ones. And by all accounts, many of them probably are, but like, this is just disappointing on so many levels because it paints this company in a way that it probably won't easily come back from, when people won't easily forget anytime soon.
I mean, you made a point there. Here's a question. What other publisher is going to take a chance on Crusader Kings?
Not many. Like, even Crusader Kings, even the developers behind Crusader Kings themselves were quick to point out that, like, Crusader Kings 2 was a budget game. Crusader Kings 3 is where they felt like they actually had the means to, like, the means and resources provided to them that they needed to make the game they wanted to make. And you couldn't do that without, like, Paradox being as supportive as it was.
Hell, you know, I mean, Empires of Sin is, hey, guess what? The Ramiros are back.
Yes. It's a mixed... People are...
It's XCOM. It's a nice little XCOM clone, which is fine.
People have mixed emotions on it, but I like that game a lot.
Yeah.
Like, what other game takes 1920s Prohibition Chicago and turns it into 4X strategy? That's such a cool idea.
Well, here's the thing. It's the sort of game in which you say, you know, I sort of like that, but I can't wait to see what Empire of Sin 2 is going to be like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Assassin's Creed, you know, Assassin's Creed? Okay. I can't wait to see what Assassin's Creed 2 is like. Because you know what happens in sequels? They're going to take what they had and build on it, and they already have feedback from players, and they're going to change all the stuff that didn't work and the stuff that did work, and it's going to, and Empire of Sin 2, there's no confirmation that there is going to be a sequel anytime soon. I'm just saying, you know, a hypothetical Empire of Sin 2. Like, you know, I played it, I said, okay, it's okay, but I'd like to see what happens next in that series. And City Skylines single-handedly brought back SimCity.
Yeah. Like, that... I mean, SimCity certainly didn't do SimCity.
No, not with EA and that stupid online component. Does anybody remember SimCity, what was it, 2013, I believe it was?
Yeah. And you have folks out there that are building city simulators now, but, like, I would say that they're more simulating City Skylines than they are SimCity now.
Yeah, yeah, oh, definitely. SimCity has not come back from 2013.
Mm-hmm.
It has not. If anything... Go ahead.
SimCity Online went really bad. I remember that was a huge fiasco.
SimCity on Facebook was a better game. But, you know, I mean, I love games like Cities in Motion, which is a plan a mass transit system game. You know? Which inevitably led me to Bus Simulator.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I mean, it's just depressing that this is going on at Paradox Interactive, and you really hope that they're able to weather this and just get better.
Root out the poison and try to make it back to a better state. I hope that they do. I still think that the video game world needs a publisher like Paradox.
And they did. Here's the thing. I can give you another publisher who was Paradox Interactive before Paradox Interactive. I don't know if you remember them, but do you remember Strategy First?
No.
They did stuff like Cohen. They did a lot of the mid-tier games like Core. And as a matter of fact, they found it. They went to bankruptcy in 2005. But they had a lot of those mid-tier games, which are really good. They were the first to do Galactic Civilizations, for one thing. They did Jagged Alliance. They did Kohan Immortal Sovereigns. They did Space Empires, you know? They did Cluster Ball. They did the first Desperados. I know you love Desperados 3. They actually were the first people to publish Europa Universalis. And they were also the first people to publish Hearts of Iron. A lot of these games that they made were taken by Paradox. You know, they did Disciples, which is, by the way, making a comeback. So, yeah, I mean, Strategy First died, and it wasn't because of this. These kind of publishers are very fragile. 505 games can just go away like that.
Yeah. Well.
Does anybody remember Microprose?
Yes, I do.
And I think they're trying to come back, but, like, what do they even have left?
I mean, Microprose was basically the Sid Meier company because all of Sid Meier's games were through Microprose. Pirates and Railroad Tycoon and...
Railroad Tycoon and this first Civilization definitely were Microprose. I think Civ 2 was as well.
Wasn't the original XCOM games also Microprose?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure they were.
I just remember, there was actually another company that was similar to, Microprose. Let me see. Microprose did publish the original XCOM. They also did Terror from the Deep and Apocalypse and Interceptor. And then they were snatched up by Infogrames and Hasbro. So, yeah. Mid-tier developers... publishers, I'm sorry. Mid-tier publishers are always on the knife's edge. I mean, Paradox bought World of Darkness, the entire kit and caboodle. Mm-hmm. Which is why you're seeing all these games like Werewolf the Apocalypse, and they actually have a VR game that's based on Wraith the Ascension. And I think, geez, who? I know they're fans of that tabletop, you know, game, but still, that's one of the more obscure World of Darkness things. And we still don't know what's going on with the World of Darkness MMO.
Yeah, it's, yeah, it's interesting. Like, so, ultimately, I hope Paradox comes out the other side of this better for not just itself, but, like, the developers out there that rely on it.
I just hope they come out of this period.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. Sony shuts down online for older Little Big Planet games to protect the community. This is from Eurogamer. Sony has permanently shut down the online services for older Little Big Planet games to protect the Little Big Planet community. In a statement issued this afternoon, Sony said online services for Little Big Planet, Little Big Planet 2, and Little Big Planet 3, PS3, and Little Big Planet PS Vita are all now offline for good after a long period of downtime. In the same breath, Sony updated Little Big Planet 3 to bring the Little Big Planet server and all 10 million community levels back online for the PlayStation 4 users only.
That's strange, by the way.
And not bring the others. Yeah, again.
Just for PlayStation 4 users only was weird.
I guess they're supporting the PlayStation 4, so it doesn't really surprise me. I think, I don't know if they've stopped for PlayStation 3, but I'm sure they want to.
They did stop for the PS3 version, yeah, but...
I don't know. I'll finish and then we can start commenting. The news comes after a difficult year for Little Big Planet. In April, Eurogamer reported on how community content for various games in the Little Big Planet series remained largely inaccessible 6 weeks after PlayStation first acknowledged issues with the servers. Community members speaking to Eurogamer for a report back in March pinned the blame on a sustained DDoS campaign orchestrated by a particular individual unhappy with Sony's treatment of franchise. Again, one person messes it up for everyone. More recently, Little Big Planet users reported offensive error messages were popping up in-game without warning. Sony then disabled the Little Big Planet servers due to ongoing attacks. Any community content previously published to the server on PS3 will still be available on Little Big Planet 3 on PS4. Sony clarified you could still play the story modes and level pack DLC of Little Big Planet 1, 2, and 3 on PS3 in single player or local co-op. Little Big Planet fans have reacted with sadness to the news and criticized Sony for not providing players with advance notice.
By the way, you'll notice single player or local co-op, which means you can't play online anymore.
Right. Yeah, so that's always been a bit laggy from when I played and when my daughter played. It sometimes wouldn't sync very well. But this, like, I guess if they keep the actual levels of Little Big Planet 1, 2, and 3 going, I mean, because that's a lot of content that was made by the community. Tons of really creative levels. And
yeah, but
I hate to see them just go into oblivion.
You can't make any levels anymore on Little Big Planet 1 or 2 or PS3 3.
You probably make them for your local system, but not upload them, right?
Well, you can upload them on the PlayStation 4
version. Right.
The thing is that this happens, you know, and people better get used to it, that their favorite games, if they're online, if they have an online component, they're going to be shut down soon. It's just the way it is. And I don't know. Just people have to get a life, and by that I mean people who are orchestrating these attacks on the games. I don't know what they're trying to prove. Do they think they can bring Sony down on their knees?
No, they're obviously not going to do that. I don't know.
What's the end game? There is the question.
Some people just want to see the world burn. I guess they just want
to. Yeah, but according to this, it's like they were unhappy with Sony's treatment of the franchise. Well, dude, you just made Sony's treatment of the franchise worse.
Yeah. But yeah, as for the preservation of these levels, there are people that haven't played it yet and might want to in the future, and you know, it's just a shame to lose all that creativity, because those are really well-crafted levels.
But what happens when you play, if there's a Little Big Planet for the PS5?
I believe there is going to be, I thought, so I don't know what they're going to do there, but I remember they were making a Little Big Planet for PS5. I saw that in one of their trailers.
That reminds me, one of the news items that was last week we never got to talk about was Sony having to walk back the two different prices for the PS4 and PS5 version. You had to buy both, or some ridiculous thing, or you had to buy both games in one big package, and now you can just get the upgrade for free.
It's not free anymore. You gotta pay $10 more if you want the upgrade.
And which is fine. I mean, that's better than, you know, than the alternative. But people kept on pointing to Smart Direct and saying, well, look at this.
Yeah. It's, They still don't have a uniform method for it too, like for first party PlayStation games, and that's kind of frustrating to say the least, because like little Horizon Forbidden West, like it looked like a freaking mess waiting to happen when they announced how the upgrade system was going to work there.
It looks a lot better than the first game though.
Yeah, but like we're talking about, like you had to buy. You couldn't just buy the standard edition on PS4 and have a free upgrade to PS5. You had to buy the deluxe edition, which was $30 more.
Hey, look, I had to deal with that same shit with MLB The Show.
Yeah, but I'm saying it's a bad
month. I know. But here's the difference, though.
You have Xbox over there assuring that every Xbox first-party game...
And some third-party, too.
...is going to be smart delivery enabled.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, PlayStation's first-party... Like, not even PlayStation's first-party games have a uniform method.
But you know what? You know what's different this time around, though, right? People actually got loud about it.
Mm-hmm. It's just kind of pathetic on Sony's part. Like, I really like my PlayStation. I really am happy that I can play Deathloop on it. I'm really happy that I'm going to be able to play other games on it that are coming. But, man, they make dumb choices.
Any stick drift, by the way?
No stick drift.
Okay, I actually had a controller have stick drift, but it was a PDP controller for $30. I just threw it out and bought another PDP controller for $30. I know some people who are having real problems with stick drift on their Switch controllers, though, and not the Joy-Cons, but the Pro controllers.
I am having issues with my Xbox One controller, where it's like it's getting to the point where the Xbox One controller. Yeah, It's getting to the point where the X button operates as if I'm pressing it, even when I'm not pressing it.
Well, you know, actually, that problem is easily solved by unscrewing and just adjusting the spring. It's the stick drift that is really the problem, because see, for those who don't know, when you're doing your analog sticks, there are sensors, and at some point they just grind down and grind down and grind down and grind down until it starts having issues, And here's the thing, a $30 controller, I'm not going to have it repaired, because fuck it, why would I? It's $10 to $15 to repair, I'm just gonna get a new controller. If it's an elite controller, then yeah, I'll get it repaired. And it's not a difficult repair either. It's like realigning your brakes on your car. It's just when people charge $70 for Joy-Cons that people get a little salty.
Especially when they start drifting, and I mean, for $70 they should not drift ever.
Well, they shouldn't drift, let's just say it should take a lot longer for them to drift, because I hate to tell you this to everybody who has their gamepad, at some point they're going to start to drift. You can't avoid it. If you have heavy use on that controller, it's going to start drifting, because you're basically wearing away at it, you know? But it shouldn't happen, like, almost immediately.
I don't know. I haven't had any other PlayStation. I've never had a PlayStation controller do that. None of them have drifted, and I've been playing PlayStation for years.
Controllers?
None of my PC ones have either, and neither have the Pro controllers I've got.
Here's the thing: there are also degrees to it. I mean, I only noticed
I guess I'm just not abusing my controller. I don't know.
I noticed that when I was playing Psychonauts 2 on PC and I was using my controller, that Raz started walking backwards if I let it alone. And I was like, oh, it's starting to drift. So, by the way, that reminds me. TJ, have you finished Spiritfarers?
I haven't started yet. I had to do Deathloop first.
What?
I had to do Deathloop first.
Oh, okay. Because that's going to give you the feels, and I want to hear your reaction to it.
Yes, I'm excited to play that, though.
Let me ask you a question. How much of the feels did Psychonauts 2 give you?
When I was exploring Ford Kroller's history, that part actually, like, a couple of those stories actually made me cry.
Really? Okay, alright, let me see if this is gonna be spoiler or not. When someone says, as you deal with the last bunch of mites, you find out you've been doing something horrific without realizing it.
Yes, that was one of them. And then the letter.
Yeah.
The letter was another.
Where you have to type out. You have to type out a name.
Yes, and like the conclusion of that. There are some really intensely upsetting parts in Psychonauts 2. Like, that game is a gamut.
I will say this, though. The part near the end in which you turn into Gogolor and just start wailing on somebody, it's immensely satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when your great aunt says, you know what, I'm going to take out the scissors and just cut this off. I've been doing a lot of post-game, but also I've started playing it again, knowing all of the secrets and seeing, you know, with new eyes, the rewatch bonus, like seeing a certain character who is supposed to be someone, but they're actually someone else, and I'm saying, oh, okay, I should have caught that clue. Oh, I should have caught that clue. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it all comes together when, it all comes together when, like, you get... And that's the thing, is that, like, you said it too. I did not expect that twist.
Yeah.
It was an interesting twist they put in that game, and usually I'm pretty good at reading those. I didn't see that one.
I also didn't see finding out who the person was who gave Raz the pamphlets to go to Whispering Rock. That was a shocker to me. It's like, whoa, okay. Anyways, we're getting awfully close to spoilers here, and the game is only a couple of weeks old. We're going to move on to the next item. And finally, some happy news, because, well, it's relative. Darkest Dungeon 2 Early Access release date set for October. This is coming to us from IGN. Developer Red Hook Studios has revealed that Darkest Dungeon 2 will enter Early Access on the Epic Games Store next month. The studio announced the news today on Twitter, stating that the game will be playable via the Epic Games Store on PC starting October 26th. When the game was first announced in 2019 with the Howling End announcement teaser, Red Hook revealed that 6 returning classes from the first Darkest Dungeon would be returning to the sequel, Grave Robber, Leper, Man-at-Arms, Plague Doctor, Highwayman, and Hellion. Red Hook also revealed that the first game's combat system will return, but it'll be tuned up for the sequel. The developer said the sequel will employ a very different metagame structure, which is really interesting, but opted not to reveal more about what that means. It seems the player will get a chance to discover the very different metagame structure firsthand in a little over a month. When the sequel was first announced, Red Hook said the team working on the game consisted of 14 people, but that growing to 20 people is anticipated. Oh my god, 20 people working on a game? That is such a massive amount. EA, you got nothing on these guys. Maybe 20 people is a lot to something like Stardew Valley, which had one person, or Papers, Please, or the Return of the Obra Dinn. When latest Call of Duty not only requires 500 people, but other studios pitching in to help. But yeah, I know you're both fans of Darkest Dungeon.
Oh yeah, that's the one where you slowly go crazy as you're going deeper into the dungeon.
Yeah, it's a game in which it's basically a roguelike, turn-based roguelike, in which your people start getting quirks and phobias, and they might be scared of spiders and need to, or they might be haunted and they have to go to pray for a long time before they can get rid of that. And it's just like, it's very dark and moody and a lot of psychological stuff going on. The main thing is people don't get too attached to your characters. TJ?
Yeah. I've been very excited to see Darkest Dungeon 2 finally come to light. We haven't really had a full length gameplay trailer that I've gotten to see, that I have gotten to sit down to yet, and so I'm extremely excited to see how like they follow up on the previous game.
What's interesting is that they're going to be using a very different metagame. So in the first game, I believe the metagame was organizing your party, which ones are ready to go out, which ones have to stay back, and leaving them. I'm wondering if they're going to have a Tamagotchi sort of situation in which they do things while you're not playing that you have to deal with. That's my guess.
Yeah. Because, like, spoilers on a quite old game at this point, but you basically go and kill the you basically go and kill a an Eldritch god, and and that's like the end game. I don't know, like I think that I'm just interested to see what like they've done in the years since they came out with the first game and how they improve upon that. Because I really enjoy the system that they set up for the first Darkness Dungeon.
I don't know, it sort of reminds me of that game. Oh, what's the name of that game again? You know the Dark Souls clone that's 2D that's set in Catholic Spain? Blasphemous. Oh. Blasphemous. Yeah, so yeah. Darkest Dungeon is the blasphemous is the blasphemous RPG, basically. It is all gloom and doom and depressing.
Yeah, nothing quite like seeing someone put on a helmet, push it down, and then blood spurt out. That's
in Blasphemous, yeah. But yeah, I'm looking forward to this. Two gets you one. That's going to be a Game Pass game because Darkest Dungeon is on Game Pass. So I have a feeling that they're prepping people to be interested in Darkest Dungeon 2. And I think they'll be able to get people to play it if it's on Game Pass. Because for those of you who wonder how developers possibly get money for being on Game Pass, it's one of two ways. Either Microsoft gives them a lump sum of money, or Microsoft gives them money for every download. And they have a choice. They can choose which one they want to do. So it'll be interesting to see if that also is announced for Game Pass.
Mm-hmm. And, like, it's... I also kind of wonder, like, do they keep the exact same classes they had?
They said they were bringing back six of the classes, which indicates there's going to be more classes.
But, yeah, that's what I'm curious about, because there were so many classes in the first game. Do they go with the exact same ones, or do they change some up drastically?
Well, if I remember, you know, Diablo, going from Diablo to Diablo 2, had some classes they dropped, some of them they kept. The Barbarian was actually from the expansion that was never released, and they brought him into Diablo 2. I think you'll have the same archetypes, just different names for it, with different types. I don't know. Did you enjoy playing as a leper?
It was interesting, I'll say that much.
Yeah.
It was really interesting. Well, like, it was particularly interesting how some of the synergies worked between characters. Like, you had people coming up with absolutely wild and outlandish compositions of teams that could outright just destroy the game. And I think that's one of the just like the unexpected consequences of having that many classes in the game is that eventually you end up with a combination that people will eventually figure out that breaks the game, quote unquote. But I still think that it's very, very, very just, like, fun to have that
opportunity. Well, that's part of the fun of Magic the Gathering, you know? People come up with decks that have an engine, and they say, this engine is going to destroy you. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's part of... That's why I play Slay the Spire so much, because I'm trying to get that perfect engine to finally defeat the heart. And I came so close. I got the heart down to 15 hit points, and it was so depressing that I lost. I got it down to 15 from 800.
Mm-hmm.
So, who knows? I mean, they said there's going to be a different metagame, which means you may have to say a lot of the same classes. But there's going... I don't know. When it comes to a game's metagame, it's very hard to predict.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that you're going to have... If they reduce the classes, like, you're going to reduce that amount of, like, metagame and game-breaking. But I also want to see, like, evolutions of some of my favorite characters from the original game. I want to see, like, some... I want to see the Beast Tamer, like what they do with that and how they make it different and what kind of beasts that you'll be able to mess with.
I wonder if they're going to do it so that you have subclasses to the main classes this time.
That'd be neat.
You know, like the Man-at-Arms can split into the Beast Tamer or whatever, you know, whatever characters are, you know, so you're basically making a choice, and then you have a choice within that choice, and you have a choice within that choice within that choice. I think that's what Guild Wars did. Or Guild Wars 2, actually. No, it was Rift that did that. Anyways, so it's coming October 26th, which isn't very far away. That's 6 weeks away.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of games that are coming out. It's like, oh, it's coming out now? I mean, there's some games that that are just sneaking up on me.
Yeah, next week is Eastward. I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, when Deathloop was released, it's going to be released tomorrow, actually. It's like, oh, it's out now. Oh, okay. I mean, Back 4 Blood is coming out in a few weeks, too. It's coming out on the 12th of October. And it's like, you see the trailer for Back 4 Blood, and say, oh, that's pretty cool. Oh, wait, it's almost out.
Mm-hmm.
So. Anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with the industry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy our feedback, so please leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us some iTunes comments. You can find me at Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at Shardron Moore.
And we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.
Oh, I didn't record it. No, I'm kidding. It's recording.
Don't do that.
I had it back up recorded too.
Oh, really? So. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. If the sound on this is unbearable, then I'll let you know.
Okay.
Bye-bye, everybody.